Hi, welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray.
For those of you who perhaps have never listened to our shows, which run every third Friday of the month from 7 till 8pm, we are both licensed medical herbalists who trained in England and graduated there with a degree in herbal medicine. We run a clinic in Garberville where we consult with patients about a wide range of conditions. And this month we're again very pleased to welcome Dr. Ray Peat to the show, and we'll be finishing up last month's discussion on food additives and the detrimental effects, detrimental health effects of food additives and ingredients that may not even be listed. But after that, we want to cover the topic of cancer in general and this immunosurveillance and immunology of cancer, and perhaps a lot of beliefs about cancer which are probably more propagated than true. So I know Dr. Raymond Peat has quite an extensive experience with this, and certainly from his background, things have changed a lot since he was studying. And I think what he will bring out is that some of the doctrines that have been made very common are pretty erroneous, and that some of the old research, as well as some of the new research, it needs to be taken carefully in the light of what it is showing. Okay, so Dr. Raymond Peat, thank you for joining us again on the show.
Hello.
Okay, so just to finish up last month's topics of the food additives and the kind of things that they will be harmful, they will be harmful in consuming them. And most people, when they buy foods off the shelf, I know in England definitely people will look very carefully at the labels, the ingredient panel, and everything, as far as I know, it has to be disclosed in England. They have got fairly strict food laws. Whereas in America, there is a certain percentage of food ingredients that legally don't have to be detailed. So I know some of those things that we mentioned last month we talked about, and I know there was a couple of things, things like dough conditioners and rennets that I'd like to just discuss with you. The dough conditioner, most people probably don't even know it exists in bread, or if they do, they haven't really thought too much about it. But would you say a little bit about the iodine bromate, which is a fairly common additive to bread, and what likely negative health effects it's going to have?
Well, besides any changes that it makes to the proteins and starches, which will make them more likely to be allergenic, any that gets into the system is going to be an anti-thyroid agent, at least.
Right. Okay, yeah. So it's going to be thyroid suppressive in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then things like I know we've spent quite a bit of time researching cheeses. I know our family consumes lots of different cheeses and have leaned more towards the European cheeses because of their consistency and the type of manufacturing they go through is certainly less, when I say harmful, but it's more of a traditional type of manufacturing for a food. I know in the States, and it's not so much just the States, but I know probably for the last 15 years or so, the genetically modified yeasts, etc., that have been used to culture cheese have been certainly very widespread, and it's quite difficult these days to get a cheese that's not actually made using a genetically engineered yeast. What do you know about the genetically engineered yeasts and the trouble with them, rather than using traditional rennet from...
Well, I think the worst problem is that they are using things to carry the microbial enzymes. There is always some debris from the aspergillus or whatever the microbe is they're using to as a source of the enzymes.
Right.
And the genetic modification is going to make them somewhat different, but they're already toxic and allergenic in themselves.
Right.
And so even if they're perfectly normal, naturally evolved organisms, any debris from them that goes along with the enzyme is going to be very risky. But even worse than simply having microbial enzymes where there used to be animal enzymes, to distribute and emulsify or mix the enzymes efficiently to make them store and package so they can be canned and then just dumped into the batch. They're using seaweed materials.
Okay.
Either carrageenan or other things that, for example, one of the compounds that's being used to make microspheres to enclose the microbial enzymes, one of these has been used to make dental molds for taking impressions of the mouth and making restorations. One person died shortly after having some of that stuff put in his mouth, and students of dentistry, a very high proportion of them had serious allergic reactions when they were practicing with them. But these things are routinely being added to foods to carry other products, and as a packaging or carrying material, they don't show up on the labels at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even on the labels for cheese, if you go into the grocery store and look at the label for the cheese, sometimes it just says rennet, and that could mean animal rennet or it could mean vegetable rennet, and the vegetable rennet never really comes from a vegetable source. It's always either genetically modified or grown on a mold, and that would be the microbial enzymes. Or it says non-animal rennet. They have all these different types. Of course, there are natural rennets available, like fig juice and cardoon thistle, but of course no companies use those anymore to manufacture. So you're saying not only are these enzymes problematic, Dr. Pete, but also the carriers that carry the enzymes so that it's easy and convenient for the cheesemaker to make cheese.
And they're being used as carriers for other foods. I don't know how far it has gone, but they're, for the last 10 years, it's increasingly common to use the seaweed materials, which are potentially deadly. One of the other most deadly allergens was sulfite that it killed a few people eating restaurant salads or seafoods that had been deodorized with it. But it was, even after that was recognized that it could be deadly when it was used on a salad, it was still used in drugs sold for treating asthma patients.
Oh my goodness.
For years and years, the product Alupint, a girl who had almost died in the hospital, being treated with that once, was about to be treated with it again. The doctor wouldn't acknowledge that she had any validity, and she grabbed the bottle and ran with her oxygen bottle. And right on the bottle it said contains metabisulfite.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote to the FDA and the drug company that made it and the Journal of the American Medical Association. They all said, yes, it's a problem. It can kill people. But they went on selling it for years.
Hmm.
And didn't even publish warnings or extra labels that this might kill you.
Were they trying to cite the small numbers of people that might be killed as a reasonable, cost?
It killed mostly people who already had asthma.
Right. Huh.
And who are already allergic to the sulfites, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned sulfites, so thank you for mentioning that. The wine and beer industry, that's pretty much what keeps most wines stable, or so they say, stable. I know that winemakers don't have to use sulfites. I'm certainly not defending them. But sulfites are prevalent as sodium metabisulfite, both as a cleaning agent and also as an agent to halt fermentation. I know in beer making, I used to make quite a lot of beer when I was younger, and I know that sodium metabisulfite tablets were pretty commonplace in beer making.
And even organic fruits can be processed with sulfur dioxide.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another very, very interesting point. The sulfur dioxide they use in dried fruit, especially, that's a fairly common ingredient, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you state as the kind of toxic side effects of sulfites, apart from what you've already mentioned for the asthma patient?
Oh, I think that's the allergic reaction is really the only serious toxic effect. But a person never knows when they're going to have an allergic reaction. If they just happen to have not eaten for an extra long time, or if their thyroid happens to have fallen, there can be a sudden increase in allergic sensitivity because the blood sugar very, very powerfully controls the release of histamine and other agents.
And in the absence, in low blood sugar situations, is that the case?
Yeah. In experiments, they found that the mildest allergen would kill animals with shock if their blood sugar was lowered to 50% of normal.
Wow. So this would be another good reason to defend the consumption of sugar. It's always been such a maligned substance, you know, sugar-free.
If they doubled the blood sugar of the animals, even the deadly allergens would only cause a slight reddening of their nose and sniffles.
Huh. All right.
So that's the motto, eat frequently throughout the day, right?
Eating frequently avoids several stress reactions, including fluctuations in blood sugar.
Huh. Now, I know there are people listening who are going to be still stuck on the mantra or the doctrine, if you like, and that's the thing that I want to open up in a few short moments about cancer, but that we're all led to believe that sugar's bad for you, you'll get diabetes if you eat too much sugar. How would you defend that, Dr. Pete, and support sugar's role in the healthy organism?
A lot of people cite Otto Warburg's work in the 1920s, in which he showed that cancer cells can't use oxygen efficiently, and so they use sugar at an extremely high rate.
Right.
And so people are now saying if cancer cells can only live on sugar, then you shouldn't eat sugar. But that just isn't an argument because the body, when you have even a small tumor, the body senses a danger and increases its production of cortisol. One of the very early events in cancer is a chronic elevation of cortisol. And the cortisol turns your tissues to sugar.
Right.
And so if you don't eat sugar, your body wastes away faster.
Right, that's the cachexia associated with
that. And the wasting away of your immune system and other tissues is really what kills most people from the cancer.
Okay.
And so there have been experiments in which very high concentrations of glucose were put in, for example, if there was a tumor in an extremity where they could isolate that circulation and put a high concentration like a glucose syrup into the artery feeding the leg, the sugar itself would cause the cancer to die.
Wow.
And so it not only spares your immune system and brain and other tissues, but it, if it can be delivered long enough at a high enough concentration, it allows something to happen in the cancer that can kill the cancer.
Wow. Okay, so let's go straight into the topic of the science and the kind of dogma surrounding current cancer theory, and the fairly new, or even in cases of older papers, the kind of rediscovered papers written some time ago that are kind of largely ignored and not part of mainstream understanding, and some of those theories about cancer and the new stem cell research that's being done. How do you see cancer cells arising? Because we've always been traditionally told or taught, at least, that cancer cells are outside of the body's general control, and we're all led to believe that this apoptosis or cell programmed death exists, and it's part of a genetic code in each cell, only has so many times that it can reproduce, and then it's automatically turned off. But cancer cells don't acknowledge that. They don't.
Everything is wrong with that belief. Going back to the middle of the 19th century, people were seeing that cancer arises in a field. They called it the cancer field of visibly abnormal cells. And after this basically inflamed area had persisted for a long time, mutant cells might appear somewhere in it. That is something that is it has been developed progressively over 150 years that there is such a thing as a cancer field, and anything irritating or destructive that the body can't overcome will cause a progressive stressing or inflammation of the tissue. And you can develop a cancer before there is any mutation identifiable. Harry Rubin at Berkeley is really the only official academic biologist who has worked on that topic, and he has shown that there definitely is a pre-mutational definitive cancer condition. And in the cancer, then in the tissue as a whole is so unhealthy that mutations, among other changes, occur in the DNA.
Right.
But the DNA event really is down the road from what is causing the cancer.
Okay.
So you're suggesting that there's such an injury or a chronic inflammation to a certain tissue, and eventually that's what causes the cancer.
And when you look at the actual functioning of a tumor, which it produces cells that look funny, have three-cornered cell divisions, and a very bizarre behavior, and genetic changes in the DNA. These cells are very, very sick cells that don't have a long lifespan. When you see them in a biopsy cross-section, what you're seeing as cancer cells are very mortal cells that probably will die in the next couple of divisions. And the doctrine that cancer cells are immortal and body cells are mortal, it's completely backwards. The Hayflick doctrine was really invented, that cells can only divide 50 times. It was really invented to reinforce this DNA-centric view of biology. And in fact, the stem cell work has definitively shown that all cells seem to be basically stem cells and immortal, given the right circumstances. And when the cancer industry is now forced to think about the idea of stem cells, but when they talk about a cancer stem cell, basically they are just going back to the old concept of a mutant cell and the clone of a mutant cell. They totally miss the point of the stem cell research, which is that the stem cells are normal cells which are able to regenerate any tissue that needs help. And the function of the tumor is some kind of a process of healing and regeneration that can't come to completion. Okay. Something is missing that would allow a tumor to let the sick cells die while the healthy cells return to normal functioning. Studies of X-ray treated tumors found that, in fact, the X-ray had accelerated the death of all of the original tumor cells, but it actually accelerated the ability of the tumor to call for help and to recruit stem cells from the bloodstream or from adjacent tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same signals that are sent out causing a region of inflammation to progressively become more active metabolically, these signals are calling for assistance and replacement cells. So when a tumor is irradiated, it increases its ability to call for help. And so the reason the tumor keeps growing, even after everything is killed with radiation, is that you have increased the injury and made it able to recruit more stem cells.
That then grow into more cancer.
Yeah, because something is still missing in the organism which could allow proper completion of the healing process.
How do you see metastases in the light of the cancer being a recruitment of stem cells to that local site?
Way back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, tests were made on prison inmates and foreigners implanting pieces of cancer in them, either with or without their permission. And it was over and over found that people who had the cancer would accept a transplant. And people who were healthy didn't suffer any consequences from having a bit of a cancer injected into them. And the bulk of the research with putting human cancers into animals are done in the nude mouse, which happens to be a mutant that not only lacks hair, but it lacks the thymus glands.
Okay.
And
this is the B cell.
So the transplantation or the metastasis, which is simply a self induced transplantation, this involves a defect in the whole organism that makes it susceptible to receiving a transplant.
Right, because it shouldn't be receiving the transplant in the first place.
I didn't hear that.
Basically, the body should be rejecting the
normally
the cancer transplant.
It's constantly rejecting cells that go astray, and if the cell isn't appropriate for that organ or tissue, it can't live in that environment and so dies.
But the animals that could accept the cancer transplants were obviously so unhealthy that their bodies didn't reject the tissue. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. They can't even grow hair. So,
so they're already a deformed organism. I want to go back to what you said about radiation, Dr. Pete. Is that why radiation is used in the cancer industry, is because it does kill some tumor cells?
Oh, yeah. It'll stop the cells that are irradiated. It stops them right in their tracks, healthy or sick, especially the sick cells were going to die anyway, but it'll stop the growth of healthy tissue and cause it to produce, first, it releases histamine and serotonin and tryptase enzymes that cause inflammation and degeneration locally. That's within 30 minutes of getting irradiated. There's a burst of these allergen reactive substances. And then that leads to a chronic overproduction of collagen and the growth of repair cells, fibroblasts. So first it's inflammation, then fibrosis.
Mm-hmm. As the body's trying to heal the inflammation or take care of it.
And if the body can't heal this scarred, atrophied tissue, then the cells can, they recruit cells that try to repair it, and so it'll keep becoming a risk of future cancers just as part of the attempt to repair a sick tissue.
So that's why, while some people might have radiation for their cancer, it's very often that the cancer returns is because it didn't take care of the underlying problem in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. And from 7:30 until the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with any questions either related or unrelated to this month's topic of current cancer research and old theory. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson-Murray.
And we're joined by guest speaker Dr. Raymond Peet, endocrinologist, biochemist and physiologist. The number here, if you live in the area, is 923-3911. Or if you live outside the area, the toll-free number is 1-800-568-3723. How about is the current theory in place that cancer cells have slightly different surface markers on their cell membranes, the MHCs that are normally associated with body cells being different in cancer cells? Is that immunology still current?
They're degenerating, and so they can go off in many directions. And so they tend to be killed very easily because they're recognized as abnormal material.
Okay.
And the normal function of what's called the immune system is to maintain the proper development and form of the body. And the phagocytosis of sick or injured tissue is really at the center of the immune system. And germs don't necessarily trigger the immune system unless they damage something.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they damage something, then the immune system tries to take care of it, cleaning up what damage has been done. And in the process, they'll clear out the bacteria or viruses. But really, in the development of the organism, the immune system is really part of our developmental nutritional control systems.
Mm. Okay. I know we mentioned at the beginning of this discussion about constant irritation, and I know when I was studying, this constant irritation, and specifically something that most people can understand is constant irritation, smoking, and how smoking ultimately in a lot of people would lead to lung cancer. And so that constant irritation of the tobacco smoke, those particles in the lung tissue, caused this change in the cell, and that was the beginning of lung cancer.
The higher a cell's energy capacity is, the more it takes to irritate it.
Okay.
And so keeping your cellular energy at a maximum means that you're pretty immune to irritation. But if something impairs your energy production, then almost anything becomes irritating.
So that's what you see commonly in low thyroid disease, is the energy production of the cell is very much decreased, and then you can have allergic reactions or cancer start up.
And in cigarette smoke, there are not only the irritants and the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are the famous carcinogens, but they are also estrogens and irritants causing pain and inflammation and estrogen-like changes. And behind those irritants, there's the carbon monoxide, which blocks oxygen use and so makes the cell spontaneously more susceptible to overstimulation or irritation. And when you add up different types of stimulation and impairment of energy production, then you have a greater risk of chronic inflammation and cancer.
Right.
And besides those hydrocarbons that you say are estrogenic, those suppress the thyroid as well.
Yeah. Alternative, or really it used to be the mainline cancer research, was really at the point of understanding how cancer development works. The work of the Pullmans in the 1940s and 50s was showing that it's the electronic behavior of these aromatic hydrocarbons that act as signals to the cells in the same way that estrogen substances signal the cells.
Mm.
And various drug interests and government interests diverted that line of research by not financing it anymore, and instead they finance the molecular biology approach, which is explaining away those hormonal actions of the aromatic hydrocarbons as nothing but a type of mutation. They happen to fit into the DNA very compactly and do mutate it, but really their main mechanism for mutating the DNA is by acting as hormones that deplete the energy of the cell while overexciting it.
Okay, so I think most people listening to the show this evening could understand the truth behind the statement that a energetic, active organism is more able to defend itself against external threats and external breakdown, but the weak, de-energized organism is more easily overcome. How does a human being energize itself in terms of improving its ATP production and being more, more energetic?
First, you need all of the essential vitamins and minerals and adequate amino acids and proteins of the right sorts.
Mm-hmm.
But sugar is very essential for keeping your thyroid functioning up without resorting to a cortisone overproduction.
Right.
And the essential nutrients, if you're getting enough sugar, will allow your thyroid to function, unless the thyroid is specifically signaled to turn off by such things as polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Okay.
And estrogens.
Okay.
Which are very systematically involved in turning down your metabolism. Once that weakening process starts from such things as smoke and hormone imitating toxins, then the bacteria in your intestines will produce toxins that you absorb. When your intestine is de-energized, it becomes permeable, and mm-hmm. anything in the intestine then can leak right into the bloodstream. So if you're exhausted, you might get flu-like symptoms. If your thyroid is being poisoned, flu-like symptoms will often make you ache all over and feel exhausted and so on.
Okay.
So the intestine is always available as a sort of a third level of toxicity and energy poisoning.
Okay, so you would avoid things like polyunsaturates. You would improve your thyroid function.
Polyunsaturates, let's just specify the polyunsaturated fatty acids are vegetable oils, corn, soy, canola, cottonseed, sesame seed oil, all those vegetable oils that are in common use in restaurants. And
in the 1980s, the French did a great series of experiments showing that every stage of the thyroid hormone production and response and transport, every stage was blocked in proportion to the number of double bonds in the unsaturated fat.
Wow.
So The monounsaturateds were slightly inhibiting compared to the saturated fats or sugars. The two double bonds like linoleic acid were much more inhibiting, and the triply or quadruply unsaturated fat, such as popular fish oils and omega minus 3 fats, these are the most inhibiting to the whole energy system.
Wow.
So the bottom line there is eat coconut oil and butter and avoid all other oils, olive oil in moderation.
Yeah, and sugar is really the basic protection against the toxicity of the oils.
Excellent.
So keep your blood sugar up with frequent meals and lots of fresh fruit.
Lots of fruits, yeah.
Lots of fruit is the best sugar.
Perfect. I think we've got a caller on the line, so let's take the caller. Caller? You're on the air? Hello, caller? Oh, we had a caller anyway. All right, well, until the caller comes back or we get another caller. I think the phones, I can see the lights flashing and the phones are going, so until we get the... Oh, you're on the air again? Hello? Well, that's not done either. Well, I know they're coming in because the lights are flashing, but for some reason they're not coming through. Anyway, so I think to get back to the cancer issue and what's not being done in terms of what's being done wrong, in terms of most people's treatment for cancer and the pretty poor success rate.
Almost universally, doctors want to kill cancer cells,
right.
But the cancer cells just want to die. They're very weak cells, and you damage the organism when you concentrate on killing the cancer cells.
Right.
And since the total death rate from cancer has simply steadily increased,
right.
The only way they can claim they're making progress is by diagnosing cancer more often. If you look in enough tissues and organs by the time a person is 50, you can find at least one cancer.
Yeah.
And so if you diagnose really hard, you can have about an 80 or 90% cure rate without actually curing anyone.
I think the caller that we had, Dr. Pete, has come back on. So we'll carry on this conversation once we've had the caller. You're on the air?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Yes.
Is that me?
It is.
Okay. I wanted to ask some questions about sugar
to clarify.
You sound like the impression I'm getting is like, oh, sugar's okay. Go for it. You need sugar. Now, as far as I know, sugar, especially refined white sugar, is addicting. It's more of a drug than a food. Most people's obesity can be traced to their addiction to sugar, and most diabetes can be traced to an overuse of sugar, which overuses the insulin to where the insulin production, the pancreas, wears out and can't produce enough insulin to keep up with the sugar, and then a person has to go on artificial insulin just to live. I assume fruit sugar... And if you're just eating fruit, that's okay. But can you clarify the difference between eating fruit sugar in an apple or an orange or eating, candy and cookies with white sugar and refined white flour? I mean, that can't be good for your body. Could you address that, please?
Starches and proteins really are very powerful stimulants to insulin. And the combination of starch and polyunsaturated fats will cause the greatest disturbance of blood sugar, much more than eating white sugar candy and such. The polyunsaturated fats block the ability to use sugar, and so the cells experience a sugar deficiency and turn on stress reactions. And starches are pure glucose rather than 50-50 fructose and glucose. And so starches are much more powerful stimulants to insulin and the stress reactions.
So just to kind of clarify that a little bit here for our listeners, Dr. Pete, you're saying that starches, well, I know they have a glycemic index of around 140 or 138, and that includes bread, pasta, chips, cookies, cakes, all those foods that are starchy carbohydrates rather than actually the sugar in them. Well, that adds to it, but the starches themselves have a much higher glycemic index, so they will cause your pancreas to have to secrete a lot more insulin. Now, white sugar has a glycemic index of around 99, and whilst organic raw honey is one of the best sweeteners there is, fruit sugars, honey is more, has a lot more fructose than sucrose, so honey even has a lower glycemic index than white sugar, and fruits have a glycemic index of around 75.
The potassium content of fruit is really what keeps the insulin much, much lower. If you eat a piece of bread, you are getting very little potassium. But if you eat a piece of fruit with the same amount of sugar, the potassium will pretty much take care of the insulin issue. It acts like insulin. And so when you eat a piece of fruit, you're having very little stimulation to your fat production.
And the other thing, too, that I've found out is that white sugar, actually, because it's been filtered, is much less allergenic to the organism than the raw brown sugar or the rapadura sugar. Dr. Pete, can you comment on that point?
The manufacturer of brown sugar, it when you centrifuge it, the first wash is blackstrap molasses. And I've noticed that there's usually a very smoky taste in the blackstrap. And it has been a common practice to burn the cane fields to make it easier to harvest. And so some of the brown stuff is smoke. And the rest of it, if you just boil sugar, even white, pure sugar, if you boil it at a very high temperature, driving off the water so the temperature rises above 100 degrees Celsius, any impurities in it will start causing polymerization reactions and create allergens from the sugar itself. And so the brown material containing a lot of biological materials other than sugar, heating that with the sugar can make some pretty intense allergens.
So to summarize all that, the best source of sugar, in your opinion, then, Dr. P, is fruit, soft, ripe, fresh fruit.
And milk sugar is.
And milk sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's number one. Number two would be raw honey. Mm-hmm. And then if you had to eat sugar, then it would be white sugar rather than brown, correct?
Yeah.
And then the starches are the least preferable form to get your sugar in because they have very little minerals to balance the high spike of glucose that's released and the high glycemic index they have, even in whole grains.
And that stimulation of insulin always leads to a surge of cortisol, which tends to destroy the protein in your tissues to keep your sugar up against the effect of insulin. Mm. And so eating even too much protein at a time without fruit will waste a lot of protein. I've seen people who were eating more than 2 pounds of meat a day who were having signs of protein deficiency with super amounts of cortisol being produced,
yeah,
and tremendous amounts of amino acids in their urine.
Wow. Waste.
So not only do these starches, so it's, you know, it's, yes, it's a well-known fact that cakes and cookies cause problems and diabetes, but it's not as well as the oils that are put in the cakes and the cookies, the vegetable oils, but it also can be too much protein not balanced by enough sugars can lead to the same situation.
Okay, I think there's another caller. So, caller, you're on the air? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay, I just had one question, and one thing I wanted to thank Dr. Pete because I heard him on another radio station. medication, and I cut out everything but butter, and it gave me a lot more energy. So I stopped using vegetable oils entirely. So thank you for that. And what I wanted to ask you was, I was told that if I folic acid, that would help depression, and I'm not sure why. Could you explain that, or is that wrong?
What kind of acid?
Folic acid?
Fruits are very good sources of folic acid. I don't know of any special function it has in digestion, but the right amount of it is very protective.
Oh, not digestion, depression.
Did you say depression?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that thing the lady was talking about
depression.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's needed to make the transmitter substances, nerve transmitter.
Okay. All right.
So eat your fruit for antidepressant activity.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
I think we're getting a little bit of disturbance on the phones. It's a bit unfortunate, and I keep hearing some very strange alien-type sounds, but that's probably some of the reason for the...
Hopefully it's only us that's hearing it.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if it goes out on the air or not. Okay, so, it's 7:48. We are very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Peet on the show, and we were talking about cancer in terms of the most current theories and old theories, and the best ways of treating the organism so far that we've got out of this is that the organism's energy, the amount of spare energy the organism has, the greater the amount, the better able to defend the organism against insults, etc., and disease in general. So what's being done currently that you're excited about in terms of cancer treatment, Dr. Peet?
More and more people are recognizing the importance of aspirin and stopping inflammation.
Okay.
And that is not always interpreted appropriately, but as we age, we accumulate more and more of the polyunsaturated fats in our tissues. And under stress, we have those circulating in the blood. And that means that they are available more and more chronically to produce the inflammatory prostaglandins. And so aspirin is, in a way, an anti-aging defense against a lifetime of accumulating polyunsaturated fat. And it's now known that it prevents essentially all kinds of cancer to some degree if you have used it chronically, but it's now being used therapeutically, backing up other more conventional or toxic treatments. But it's a very safe treatment, and its use is increasing.
Aspirin's been around for a long time. Sorry,
and it's very cheap.
But originally they derived acetyl salicylic acid from, or precursors to that compound, from white willow bark and meadow sweet and other herbs. So it's a very, very ancient remedy.
How many aspirins, or how much aspirin would you suggest, Dr. Peet? Because I know some people out there undoubtedly will be talking about gastric ulcers and bleeding and, you know, how bad aspirin is for you. So,
the aspirin should be backed up with, always with plenty of vitamin K.
Right.
And not the synthetic K, but natural K1 and K2. And vitamin K happens to be structurally extremely similar to a tropical botanical drug called Lapacho, or Lapachon.
Wow.
And that has been used for generations with lots of success for treating cancer.
Yeah.
And it's analogous to several other drugs that have a good history of treating cancer. Imodin from aloe and cascara is structurally analogous to vitamin K. And tetracycline, the microbial antibiotic, it has considerable anti-cancer action, but it doesn't kill the cancer cells necessarily. It protects the organism the same way cascara does to protect the mitochondria from being poisoned.
Okay, I think we've actually got one or two more callers on the line, so let's take the next caller. Caller, you're on here?
Hi, I almost hate to call in and interrupt, but I have so much gratitude for these programs. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for your call.
Oh, it's immensely informative. I'm in really great health, luckily. I just follow the herbs and good food. And do you have any feelings about quercetin and staying healthy? Or
okay, Dr. P, do you have much to say about quercetin?
What was the word?
The quercetin.
Quercetin?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you get similar things in fruits in the safest way, I think.
Okay.
Oranges have some substances that are even safer and better than quercetin. Naringenin, for example.
Right.
That's my favorite thing in that category.
And also nettle leaf, not only is it high in vitamin K, I always like to go on about nettles, it's very high in vitamin K, but it also has quercetin as well as lots of minerals and antihistamine function. Well, the quercetin is part of the antihistamine function.
Okay, I think there's another caller. Caller? And we'll take this next caller, Dr. Pete, and I think this might be...
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, now I have two things, and now when you mentioned the nettles, that I thought of another, but I guess there's very little time. So you're using white willow bark in MediHerb, what would be maybe an average amount for what Dr. Pete is recommending, like one tablet?
Well, the MediHerb tablets, I think you'd probably need to be using, I mean, if you're talking about just an anti-inflammatory effect daily, probably about one tablet daily, maybe split up into a couple doses. But if you're talking about an anti-cancer dose, it'd probably be more like 9 tablets a day.
Okay, well, I think people might like to know that there's something besides like a Bayer aspirin, which some people don't want to use that company, the corporate company, that there is an alternative called MediHerb.
Yes, and there is white willow bark. White willow bark itself is so, you have to take so much of it. So if you make a tea, you have to drink a lot of tea. That's why when it's standardized and concentrated, it's more effective. And it is a problem with the aspirins. They have starches and other odd, weird ingredients in them. But the one brand that doesn't have as many terrible ingredients is the Western Family brand, if you were looking for aspirin. Otherwise, for white willow bark, we have a standardized white willow bark powder that is standardized to contain a certain amount of salicylic acid, and the therapeutic dose is much easier, a couple capsules a day rather than gallons of white willow bark tea. But did you have another question?
Yes, I wanted to ask the audience that there's somebody who has an abundance of BBQ that I would like to trade for a plant, and my number is 92514. This is Corin, and the alien sounds are coming from the radio.
Yeah, I thought I heard those too. Your number again?
I'll repeat. Corin's number is 707-926-5142. And she's looking for some feverfew plants. If anyone has some extra feverfew plants, she wants to trade.
Good. Okay.
Thank you for your call, Corin.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with all the echo tonight.
I'm not sure.
It's all coming from the calls from the phones, but I don't know why.
Well, we won't say it's anything to do with any kind of government control or anything like that. It's just the way it is. Okay, because I know there's plenty of controversy surrounding some of the topics that we cover. I know people certainly like to hear it.
I want to ask Dr. Pete one more question tonight, and that is, what do you think of the American Cancer Society and the whole cancer treatment in this day and age?
Oh, I haven't been following it recently, but I've checked in on them over the last several decades, and I see a lot of fraud. Lecture tour sponsored by them was to show that they had cured lung cancer and leukemia. And this famous biologist from University of California was using phony statistics to make it look like the American Cancer Society was responsible for the disappearance of both leukemia and lung cancer. and the figures simply didn't show it for lung cancer if you used the right kind of statistics, and ending of atomic bomb testing accounted for the drop in childhood leukemia.
Right.
But they do propagandistic things pretty habitually, I think.
So why it seems to be, I mean, a lot of the research you send me is a lot of scientists around this country and around the world doing research on anti-cancer substances, but it seems it never reaches the hospitals and where people are actually getting treated for cancer. So why is that, Dr. Pete?
Well, the drug companies really want a good drug for them is something that you pay all your money for and keep taking as long as you're alive.
Yeah.
And they don't want people getting cured with something like aspirin and fruit juice.
Or Pau D'Arco and...
It would take their power away, wouldn't
it? Cascara.
Okay. All right. Well, I know it's getting pretty twitchy there in the control room, and it's 7:58, so we've got two more minutes, but hey, we need to think about wrapping up for this evening.
So,
well, thank you very much again for joining us, Dr. Pete.
Thank you.
Okay, so for those people who've listened to our show, thank you very much for all the feedback and your comments. Much appreciated.
Dr. Ray Pete can be contacted via his website on www.raypete.com, and that's spelt R-A-Y-P-E-A-T.com, R-A-Y-P-E-A-T. And we can be reached toll-free on 1-888-WBM-HERB, which is 1-888-926-4372 for consultations or further information. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for joining our show, Dr. Pete.
Okay, and I think we'll just break the end of the show by saying the truth is out there for those people who want to hear the truth. Stand up, look around, open your ears, and the truth is out there. So whilst a lie, and this is one of Dr. Raymond Pete's quotes on his newsletters, whilst, and I think I can get this kind of right, whilst a lie spreads around the world, truth is just putting her boots on. So think about that, folks. This truth is not going to be easy to find, but it's out there.